بسم اللہ الرحمن الرحیم. This is a beginning of a new series of programs under the title of Service to Humanity through the courtesy of Ahle Bayt TV, for which I am particularly grateful to Mr. Baqir Zaidi and Zahra Behn for allowing us this opportunity. Service to Humanity is carried out in many forms, but this is a project based on service to humanity through health and education. And one of the platforms that has been working on this particular aspect is the Imamia Medics International, of which I'm currently the global president. Imamia Medics International is an NGO which is working in 20 countries across the world. And it serves humanity through promoting health and education through various projects. We are involved in many charities, in serving the people who are sick in different parts of the world, particularly in Pakistan, India, Iraq, and many other countries. We are also engaged in developing projects for health education through university projects, academic activities, international collaborations, scientific conferences, and many others. So this program is called IMI Health Hour. And today I have a guest who is very renowned physician. His name is Yadullah Sayyid. I mean, what better name can you have than Yadullah Sayyid in the name of Imam Ali alayhi salam? Yadullah has many qualifications. After graduation, he did MRCP, and then he did post-graduation in different fields. He's basically a nephrologist, but he's also done a lot of training and acquired expertise in intensive care. So could I introduce my friend Yadullah Sayyid to the audience, and then we'll ask him how we proceed further. We're going to talk about kidney disease, particularly in relation to renal failure. So Yadullah, please go ahead.
Assalamu alaikum, Dr. Sayyidi, and assalamu alaikum, audience. Thanks for a very kind introduction. Kidney diseases has got a very important place in today's day and age, because not only it brings in a lot of financial burden, but it also brings in a huge health burden. A lot of people are being affected with renal failure, what is being called nowadays as kidney injury. So acute kidney injury can give rise to a lot of disability, a lot of ill health, and will have financial implications for patients and healthcare as such. The other spectrum is the chronic kidney disease, which was called as chronic renal failure. And it has got a huge spectrum. Today we will discuss the spectrum, starting from acute kidney injury, what are the different types of acute kidney injury, or what in some parts of the world is called as acute renal failure, which is an old terminology. Mm-hmm. And we'll also go through chronic kidney diseases, what are the common causes of it, what can be done to prevent it, and what sort of care should be taken so that we delay the inevitable of going on to hemodialysis or getting transplanted.
Right. Since this program goes to many parts of the world, 40 countries basically, so Yadullah, thoda Urdu mein aur thoda Angrezi mein mila ke hum log Urdu mein aapko, aap to Hyderabad Deccan ke rehne wale, Urdu to aapke yahan paida hui hai, to ho nahi sakta. میرا خیال یہ ہے کہ تھوڑا سا اگر اس میں مکس کر لیں تاکہ وہ لوگ ہمارے وہ دیکھنے والے اور سننے والے جو استفادہ حاصل کر سکیں اس سے. تو آج جو ہم بات کریں گے وہ گردے کی تکلیف کے بارے میں بات کریں گے, اس میں کیا امراض ہیں اور کیا ان کی نوعیت ہوتی ہے. اور مجھے یہ پتہ ہے کہ آپ کا اس میں نہ صرف ایک تجربہ ہے بلکہ آپ کڈنی ٹرانسپلانٹ کے سلسلے میں بھی, اور آپ نے فقہ بھی پڑھا ہے ماشاء اللہ, قم میں بھی آپ رہے ہیں, ایتھکس پہ بھی کام کیا ہے, آپ کو بہت ساری چیزیں ہیں. تو ہم مکس کر کے کچھ باتیں ہیں, تو گردے سے متعلق جو باتیں ہیں ذرا سا پھر سے کہیے آپ اس کو کیا بات.
پہلے شروعات میں آپ کو یہ بتانا چاہتا ہوں کہ گردے کے چند فنکشنز ہوتے ہیں, یا چند کام گردے کرتے ہیں جو جسم کے ویل بینگ کے لیے بہت ضروری ہے.
جی,
جیسے کہ آپ کے جسم میں جو نجاست ہوتی ہے, گندگی ہوتی ہے اور ٹاکسنس ہوتی ہیں, وہ پیشاب کے ذریعے وہ باہر
جی
کرتے ہیں. اگر گردے مکمل طور پر بند ہو جائیں تو آپ اس کے سمپٹمس جب دیکھنے لگتے ہیں, کیونکہ وہ ٹاکسنس جو ہوتے ہیں جسے ہم میڈیکل ٹرمینالوجی میں یورینک ٹاکسنس کہتے ہیں,
جی,
وہ بلڈ اپ ہونا شروع ہوتے ہیں, وہ دل پر دماغ پر اثر کرنا شروع کرتے ہیں. अगर वो बस थोड़ी सी मकदार में बढ़ते हैं तो उसके सिम्टम ज़्यादा नहीं होते हैं, लेकिन किडनी फेलियर के आप ब्लड टेस्ट से मालूम कर सकते हैं। दूसरी नौीयत ये होती है कि आपके जो जिस्म में सॉल्ट्स और इलेक्ट्रोलाइट्स होते हैं, गुर्दे उसे एक बैलेंस में मेंटेन करके रखते हैं। अगर किडनी का जो फंक्शन है, गुर्दों का जो फंक्शन है, अगर वो कम हो जाए तो चंद सॉल्ट्स जो हैं, चंद इलेक्ट्रोलाइट्स जो हैं, जैसे कि पोटेशियम है, जैसे कि फॉस्फेट है, वो बढ़ सकते हैं। उससे दिल की हरकत में फ़र्क आ सकता है, ख़ास तौर पे खसूसन जब पोटेशियम बढ़ जाता है, और उससे रिदम डिस्टर्बेंसेस हो सकते हैं। हाँ, दिल की हरकत में फ़र्क आने की वजह से वो जानलेवा भी हो सकता है।
अच्छा, कैन आई जस्ट गो बैक टू द फंडामेंटल क्वेश्चन दैट वाज क्रॉपिंग अप इन माय माइंड, दैट व्हाट इज द epidemiological statistics of kidney diseases in the UK and what is it in India and Pakistan?
So in United Kingdom we have got what's called as renal registry.
Right.
So all the hospitals and all the healthcare sector submit their data onto the registry.
Right.
And what we have found even in this setup is that we have not caught hold of all the patients that are available in the community who suffer from chronic kidney disease. In India and Pakistan, unfortunately, we don't have the setup. So a lot of people have...
And what about the Middle East, like Iraq, because this program goes to Iraq. A lot of people watch it in Iraq.
Even in those countries, people are unaware. The problem is that most of the people who have got kidney impairment or chronic kidney disease, initial phase, they don't have any symptoms at all.
Mm-hmm.
It gets noticed, it will be accidentally diagnosed or discovered when a blood test is done,
mm-hmm.
and you see that the creatinine is raised, or EGFR, which is estimated glomerular.
So what is creatinine?
Creatinine is a marker of kidney function.
Right.
Urea is a marker of kidney function. And EGFR is calculated, it's a way, percentage way of representing what kidney function is,
mm-hmm.
and how much percentage kidney function is.
So is the kidney disease very prevalent in the UK and Europe?
It is prevalent in United Kingdom and European countries and Western countries, and it is prevalent in Asian countries as well. And it is a part of a spectrum of multisystem diseases,
mm-hmm.
like hypertension, diabetes. So one of the organs that are affected in hypertension and diabetes,
mm-hmm.
is kidneys. Because
yes. Now, just coming to my mind that in India and Pakistan, I know definitely that kidney stones, renal calculi, is a major, major problem there.
That's true.
Is it true for UK and Europe as well?
Well, the prevalence of kidney stones is much higher in those countries compared to...
Is it because of the climate, dryness, or dietary factors? Or
I think it's multiple factors.
Multiple factors.
Climate plays a role, especially getting dehydrated, not drinking enough water is one of the reasons.
How much water should one drink, a healthy, normal person, per day? How much water do you recommend?
Well, the answer to that varies from person to person. One thing one must realize is that you can't have a shirt for everybody, same size shirt,
mm-hmm.
for everybody. So the answers needs to be tailored to a particular patient, but on a gross level, you should be passing good amounts of urine which looks clear.
Mm-hmm.
Say, for the sake of discussion, patients who have got chronic kidney disease, they have got low renal function, so they won't be passing a lot of water.
Right.
So if they drink a lot of water, then it gets retained in the body and can be detrimental.
Will it lead to edema formation then?
It will lead to edema formation.
And is the same, an edema when it gets generalized, is that called, what's it called, anasarca?
So if the edema affects the whole of the body, then it's called as anasarca. You can get edema in other conditions like heart failure, and you can get edema in liver diseases when proteins are low, and lots of other conditions. But coming back to the original question about drinking water,
yeah.
if you're healthy and your kidney functions are normal, you should keep yourselves hydrated. You should not get dehydrated. You should be able to pass clear urine, which shouldn't have any color.
So what are the other signs of dehydration apart from the quantity of urine or the color of urine? Any dryness of lips, for example?
So if somebody is dehydrated, their lips would be dry, the turgor of the skin will be lost, and the common symptoms the patient,
okay.
especially
okay.
the elderly ones, they present is that when they're standing up, they feel dizzy.
Okay.
Because their blood pressure falls down when they're standing up, what we call...
What I've seen is, I'm sorry for interrupting you there, that one of the commonest factors in Pakistan, India, is the dehydration because of the climate. I think that's an important fact. I know a lot of people don't drink enough water. In fact, they should be drinking more water. And I think this is a message we'd like to give, that drink as much water as you possibly can, because unless you take a proper quantity of water, obviously you will not have the outflow, and that may lead to problems. The essential thing is that the quantity of the fluid that you take should be enough to let the blood metabolize all the products that are there, and then you have the exit and output. The clinical sign of dehydration could be less output. What else?
Apart from feeling lightheaded,
yep.
apart from feeling dry lips, apart from loss of turgor, if the patient is very dehydrated, then they may fall down or collapse because of dropping the blood pressure when they are standing up. It's very important that people should keep themselves adequately hydrated, especially in the summer season.
Right. What about fasting?
Well, in terms of fasting, when you're fasting, you fast for X number of period. But when you have iftar, and in between iftar and sahur, you get an opportunity to drink adequate amount of water.
So you can compensate that.
So you can compensate that. So it shouldn't be affecting your health
right.
in a bad way, until unless you have been advised by your physician not to fast. There are certain conditions or there are certain subsets who are exempted from fasting.
What about the dietary factors? What are the contributory factors in diet which can lead to acute or chronic renal failure?
So diet plays an important role in healthy lifestyle. So you're supposed to eat a healthy diet. You're supposed to eat low added salt diet, especially if you're hypertensive, then you shouldn't be adding salt to the diet. And Asian foods are very high in salt content. Look at pickles, papers, achars. Canned foods, these are very high in salt content.
What is the role of proteins, like red meat and white meat?
So white meat is good for health, but it should be a balanced diet.
Mm.
Now coming in terms of diet per se will not cause kidney failure.
Right.
Kidney failure is caused by lots and lots of different conditions. Anything that decreases the blood flow to the kidney acutely.
Can you name a few conditions?
Well, if you take the case of acute kidney injury, when you get admitted to the hospital, you can get an acute deterioration.
Can you describe this acute kidney injury for a general audience?
Sure.
What is it?
Sure. What it means is acute deterioration in kidney function. And how we investigate this by doing some simple blood tests, looking at the urea, creatinine.
No, what are the signs and symptoms? That's the first thing.
Now, the interesting thing is that you may not have any signs and symptoms.
Okay.
You may have signs and symptoms pertaining to the disease that has given rise to acute kidney injury.
Such as?
So, commonest is if you get a severe infection, you develop severe sepsis.
Septicemia.
Septicemia, and you develop septic shock.
Mm-hmm.
Anything that gives rise to shock that decreases the perfusion to the kidney or blood flow to the kidney can cause kidney failure.
Mm-hmm.
A severe heart failure can also cause kidney failure because
cardiac
the blood
arrest.
Cardiac arrest absolutely will cause kidney failure. It causes
and
multi-organ
chronic
failure.
Chronic cardiac conditions requiring like pacemaker, for example.
So chronic congestive cardiac failure can give rise to kidney failure and the other way around. And in medical terminology, we label it as cardiorenal failure,
mm-hmm.
One organ leading to failure of another organ and vice versa.
What is the role of diabetes?
So diabetes is a multi-system organ disease. It affects almost every
multi-organ,
organ.
Multi-organ,
yeah. The reason being that what diabetes does, it causes changes in the blood vessels, the inner lining of the blood vessels that supply each and every organ.
Right.
And when there are changes in the arteries supplying oxygen and essential nutrients to various organs, be it heart, brain, lung, kidney, then these kidneys start getting involved and affected. Diabetes in the initial phases of kidney involvement will give rise to leakiness of protein.
Right, right.
And if the diabetic condition is well controlled, glucose is well controlled during this stage, and the blood pressure is well controlled if the patient is hypertensive.
So what are the two types of diabetes that you see in clinical practice?
Yeah. So if during just finishing the previous one, if you control these two things, then the progression of kidney failure can be prevented.
Right.
But once the proteinuria is fully set in, then you can't reverse back and go back to backstage.
Right.
Diabetes, one is the type that requires insulin, type 1 diabetes. And the other is type 2, which you can treat with the medicines.
Which
and
is the commoner of the two in our population, the Asian population?
So type 2 diabetes is much more commoner compared to type 1 diabetes.
Is it genetically predetermined or hereditary in nature? Or?
So there is a genetic contribution, but environmental factors play a role as well.
Right.
The development of diabetes.
Coming back to this question of renal failure, you said about acute renal. What is a chronic renal failure?
So any derangement of kidney function that lasts for more than 3 months, we classify as chronic kidney disease.
What does that mean in simple terms?
So simple terms, if you go and have a blood test done and
right.
your creatinine comes as more than what it should be or it's abnormal and raised, and if after 3 months you do another test and it's
still
what it is.
Average normal level of the creatinine?
So average normal creatinine level depends on the way you're testing. The lab would always give you a reference level to compare it with. And there are two different systems. One is American system of measuring it in milligrams per deciliter. And there is a European way which estimates in micromoles per liter. So it depends. The lab will always give you a reference range what it should be if it is normal.
Mm-hmm.
But more important than creatinine, it's the EGFR or estimated glomerular function rate. So from creatinine, looking at the age of the person, race of the person, and weight of the person, you calculate that. And it should be greater than 60.
Right.
Okay.
So what are the symptoms of the chronic renal failure? I mean, the patient presenting with what?
So in the initial stages, the patient may be absolutely asymptomatic.
Mm-hmm.
That's so surprising because there'll be slight derangement in the renal function. He may be asymptomatic. Even in the later stages, he may be asymptomatic. Once it's full blown, there are functions of the kidney which get affected. And for example, for the sake of discussion, as we have already discussed two, one is the kidney excretes water, and if water excretion is impaired, the urine output is decreased, then you start developing edema. Then the second one will You may not develop edema, that's true. And if these toxins, they accumulate in the body, what is called as uremic toxins, then you can go into coma. This is the extreme.
That's the ultimate.
Before that, you may be put off food, you may not be eating well, you may be very fatigued and tired because kidney plays an important role in the production of red blood cells. So there is a hormone.
Does it affect the activity of the bone marrow, or is it metabolic change or some chemical formula?
What happens is that kidney synthesizes a hormone called erythropoietin.
Mm-hmm.
And that gets low once the kidney function starts dropping down. And people who have got chronic kidney disease, especially stage 3 and 4.
Any age?
Well, it can affect any age. Sometimes people are born with some congenital problems.
Yeah.
So even kids can get that. And it grows into their adult life. The importance of identifying chronic kidney disease or kidney failure is that, A, you want to take steps to prevent the ill effects of it.
Mm-hmm.
So you may ask, what are they and what steps we should be taking?
Prevention is always better than cure.
So what we should do is the doctor would be following you up every 3 months, 6 months or a year, depending on how bad your kidney function is.
Mm-hmm.
The other things that you should refrain from doing is stop taking any tablets or medications that are nephrotoxic.
What can you name a few, please, which are the common medications which can cause damage to the kidney?
Yeah. So one of the commonest ones that can cause severe damage to the kidney
the trade names, just the generic names.
So are the painkillers, which we classify as non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs, like ibuprofen, like diclofenac.
Is there any dosage of ibuprofen which will damage the kidneys?
So it is dose dependent, that's true, but there are other factors play and contribute as well. What is important is that if you have got a kidney impairment or a chronic kidney disease, until unless you're advised by your doctor, so if it's a mild degree, say stage 1 and 2, you may get away with it. But if you have got stage 3 and above chronic kidney disease, most of the doctors, they avoid using non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs because they can be deleterious and injure the kidney. There are certain other drugs that you are taking, and they can be taken in chronic kidney disease.
Such as?
Like blood pressure tablets, like ACE inhibitors, angiotensin converting enzyme inhibitors, or angiotensin 2 receptor blockers. But should you get unwell, then you should immediately report to the doctor, because they maybe need to withheld temporarily, like water tablets, blood pressure tablets, some other blood pressure tablets.
Water tablets, diuretics.
That's true. So they may need to be withheld temporarily until the acute phase passes off. And this is a medical decision which the doctors will evaluate and would look into and modify your treatment. So the other thing which I have seen in Asian countries is the use of certain heavy metals. And in China, they use herbal medicines.
Yes.
So
what heavy metals are you talking about?
So heavy metals like lead, and certain other sort of group of heavy metals. So they should be avoided because they are toxic to the kidney. You should avoid Chinese herbal medications indiscriminately, because they can affect the kidney function as well, and they can damage the kidney function as well.
Right.
And we do see cases of that infrequently, people who are using this herbal medications.
Right, so we've talked about various symptoms, we've talked about various causes and different. Now, when you have a case of acute kidney or renal failure, how do you treat it?
So when you have got an acute renal failure, first of all, you treat what is causing the acute renal failure. You prevent and avoid anything that is going to add insult to the wound or insult to the injury.
Such as?
So you may have to withhold some of the medications that the patient
is on. So drugs could be one of the factors, which can be nephrotoxic.
Yeah, and you probably will have to avoid certain things that can add on to the kidney failure or can precipitate. Sometimes people need tests like CT scans. And we give
CT scan of what?
CT scan of any part of the body that involves giving a dye, iodinated contrast dye, that can cause injury to the kidney.
Okay, so you're talking about the contrast medium studies.
That's right. So we label it as contrast-induced nephropathy.
Right.
So this is something the doctors know, and they make a risk-benefit assessment, and they take preventive steps. Sometimes you need to do the test because it's life-saving.
Yes.
And you have to go ahead and do some treatment depending on that test.
Right.
So it's extremely important to take precautionary measures.
Is there any medical cure for acute renal failure?
So in terms of acute renal failure, the medical cure entails treating the cause. Say, for the sake of discussion, if you've got an infection, treating the infection, giving IV fluids, giving antibiotics. So that's a cure for that.
Will it require hospitalization, or can you treat
Most of the acute kidney injuries, or when you have got a kidney dysfunction, needs hospital admission. Some of them can be managed in the community. If it's simple, the doctor needs to make an assessment whether this can be managed in the community or not. One of the common things that you come across in elderly population, especially men, is they have got bladder outlet obstruction. They can have prostate hypertrophy. They can have lower urinary symptoms. They may have dribbling, poor stream of urine, hesitancy. And when this is going on for quite a long time and it is not treated and corrected, it can lead to retention of urine and can give rise to back pressure and can give rise to renal damage.
What can that do?
So it can cause kidney impairment.
Okay.
But the solution is simple, that you go and see a doctor if you're having those symptoms. He may put you on tablet for the prostate, or sometimes you need a urinary catheter to be inserted, either short-term or long-term.
Any disadvantage of a catheter?
Well, when you have got a catheter, there is a risk of infection. So you have to take precautions. But at the same time, catheters are only placed, for urinary catheters, indwelling urinary catheters are only placed if they're deemed must.
Yes, if they're absolutely necessary.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right. Now, finally, we come to the aspect of chronic renal failure.
Yeah.
So how do you manage that case?
So chronic...
A patient who's been in a state of low-grade renal function for some length of time
yeah.
could have a cardiac condition, could be diabetic, could be because of non-specific reasons, because you may not be able to identify the reasons. Could it be genetic as well?
So there are genetic diseases that can give rise to chronic kidney
right.
impairment. The commonest is polycystic kidney disease.
That's the one I was thinking of.
Chronic, yeah. And you can just get out of the blue, but normally runs in
any
the
family. Any autoimmune diseases?
There are a lot of autoimmune diseases that can present with kidney impairment,
mm-hmm.
like lupus can affect the kidney.
Fine.
There's a group of disorders called vasculitis,
mm-hmm.
ANCA-associated vasculitis. So there's Wegener's granulomatosis, Chuck-Strauss disease.
They're not very common, though.
They're not that common as compared
common.
To the routine diabetes and hypertension affecting
so
the kidneys.
So the important conditions are diabetes, hypertension, and drugs.
That's true. So what we do, just finishing off where we left in the acute kidney injury,
right.
when the acute kidney injury is pretty severe and you're not passing any urine and the uremic toxins are rising and the potassium is rising and it's affecting your body, then the doctor may decide that you need renal replacement therapy. So renal replacement therapy...
Please talk about that.
Yeah. There are two types of renal replacement therapy.
Mm-hmm.
One is hemodialysis.
Right.
Okay. And
can you define it and express it in little
so
simple lay terms?
Yeah, what happens in hemodialysis is that you have a line that is put into one of your big veins, into the neck or into the groin, and it has got two ports.
The jugular vein, for example?
Yeah, you can internal jugular vein.
Internal jugular.
Or femoral vein.
Or femoral, yes.
And you take blood through one port, send it to a machine. The machine cleans the blood, means takes, removes the uremic toxins and corrects the electrolytes and the pH and acid-base imbalance that is created,
right, right.
and then sends the blood back. Now, it can be done for about 3 to 4 hours in what we call
how
as dialysis.
How often do you need it?
Well, it depends on how unwell you are.
Right.
If you're very unwell with low blood pressure, then instead of dialysis, you'll be sent to intensive care where you will be having hemofiltration. You
right.
have the exactly same process where you have a line inserted into neck or groin and attached to the machine, but the settings of the machine are different and it goes on 24/7.
Right.
That can happen also for shorter duration, what is called as PERT or SLET for 12 hours, or for further shorter duration, 6 hours, depending on the need and the clearance that is required. You can do adjustments with the machine, and then the machine removes as much as you want to.
And how long do you need the dialysis process to go?
So in terms of acute kidney injury, if you have got an acute kidney injury because of septic shock, for the sake
mm-hmm.
of discussion,
mm-hmm.
and your kidneys pack up, you're not passing urine, there's a chance that your kidneys may recover and regenerate.
Right.
Whether they are going to go back to the normal kidney function, it's debatable. They may not.
Right.
They may settle down with some renal degree of renal impairment, which will become chronic renal impairment later on,
right.
but not requiring dialysis. Or you may end up requiring lifelong dialysis.
So chronic, going back to chronic, because we're running short of time, I've got only 7 minutes more.
Yep.
Can you talk about chronic renal failure
so
and
the
management of it?
So the good thing... about management of chronic renal failure is that when you see these patients, you do the right thing so that their kidney failure or kidney disease.
So the first thing is the clinical management, like signs
so,
and symptoms.
So first thing
history
is
history taking.
So first thing is that what you do is you manage and identify what is the underlying disease, like
and
diabetes.
Who's the person who does that? General practitioner or a specialist?
That's a very good question.
Mm-hmm.
In UK. The management approach is a multidisciplinary approach,
right
from involving the general practitioner
mm-hmm.
to a dietitian, to a psychologist, to
right.
a specialist nurse, to an anemia nurse, to a physiotherapist, to relevant people, including most importantly the nephrologist.
Right.
And there are a lot of joint clinics that are done, like people who have got diabetes and chronic kidney disease. So they have got a joint nephrology and diabetes clinic. People who have got HIV and has got chronic kidney disease, I have got joint disease. People who have got sickle cell disease and chronic kidney
so
disease.
So multidisciplinary.
You name it, and you have got transition. people who have got who were kids had chronic disease and have come into adult medicine, so they are being followed in that. Then you have got genetic disorders clinic. So in this, what happens?
Is it a common practice in all hospitals in across the NHS in UK, or is specific centres?
So most of the tertiary centres provide majority of these services. The beauty of NHS is that if one centre doesn't provide a service, the centre that is providing a service, you can refer it to them.
So I know you're from India. So what is the practice in India?
So in India, the structure or the services are pretty...
Less than optimum in its infant stage.
Let's
call it less than optimum.
There are really good services major cities.
In big cities.
But if you go into smaller cities, then you will find, you will struggle to find dialysis slots for patients. Mm. And maximum time the patient can be dialyzed maybe twice a week, which is suboptimal.
And it's expensive, isn't it?
It's very expensive. I've been away from the country for more than a decade. I've been living in the UK for more than a decade.
Right,
I don't know what the schemes the government has put through there.
Right.
But I can talk about NHS, and NHS has got a robust way of dealing with this, and they've got extraordinary facilities where they not only get patients in a regular interval, their anemia management is looked into, whether they need iron, they need vitamins, or they need erythropoietin, and that's followed up by the nurse as well as the nephrologist. Bones are weakened when you have got chronic kidney disease.
Right.
So that is looked into what their parathyroid hormone levels are, what their calcium is, phosphate is, their dietary advice is given, tablets are given to control things. If they need any surgery for parathyroid,
so long-term prognosis is good?
So in terms of, it depends on how fast is your chronic kidney disease going on. Say you are 70 or you're 80 and you have got an EGFR of about 50, you're unlikely to need any dialysis if something drastic doesn't happen. And if we follow simple good rules, then you will carry along with that kidney function, and that will serve you without causing much symptoms.
Let me tell you about Pakistan, because I'm familiar with that. Dialysis has been a major source of relief to these patients over the years. But more and more dialysis units are being set up. And we've got wonderful examples of people like Adib Rizvi, the Institute, Said Institute of Urology and Transplantation. Adib has done amazing work, and he's doing this free service to everybody. And there are lots of other, Jafar Naqvi put up the kidney center in Karachi and things. In Lahore, there are several centers. IMI is doing the same work. Imamia Medics International. I've just received information this morning from the headquarters that we have 6 machines donated for dialysis work in Pakistan, in northern areas. And we're hoping to send them over to areas like Gilgit and Baltistan and remote areas of Pakistan where the services are very limited and disease is prevalent. It's highly prevalent. So I would conclude by saying that first, thank you so much, Yadullah, for giving
so much information.
I couldn't absorb much, really. It was too technical for me. But the point I'm making is that you have been very helpful. I'm grateful to you. And I'd like to mention here to the viewers that we'll continue with this series of programs with different specialists coming to talk. And we'd like to welcome your questions from the next session onwards. What I'd also like to say that Imamia Medics International is taking up this important project of service to humanity across the board. Wherever you watch Alibad TV, please switch it on, get the information and send us the feedback. And if you want any particular specialty to be covered, I can assure you we have doctors across the world who would be happy to join and do this service for the welfare of mankind. I'd like to thank you, Yadullah, once again. And
thank
I'm
you.
So grateful to you for giving you any message that you want to give to the audience.
The most important thing is that you should follow doctor's advice, and you should not buy over-the-counter medication there and use it indiscriminately. That's the biggest evil there, and you should avoid doing that, and you should follow a healthy lifestyle. One of the things which I have not mentioned in this talk is about peritoneal dialysis, which is very much relevant there. And acute PD is done quite frequently where their tube is put into the tummy in areas where there are not resources and resource constraints, and you don't have many dialysis machine.
Right.
So that's something that can be offered in acute setting.
I think what we'll do is, because I know that you worked in transplant units also. So next session, maybe sometime during the next few months, I'll invite you again to talk about two issues, organ transplant, kidney transplant, which is a burning issue. And you know about ethics also, because it's your field. So in the next session, we can talk about intensive care, your experience in intensive care, also talk about dialysis not helping so much, or a person requiring transplant surgery, and what is the current status of organ transplantation in the UK, in the US, and elsewhere.
Sure.
I would like to thank you once again, and
thank you
very much for viewers for watching this program. We'll meet again next week, inshallah, and we'll talk. Probably the next week is going to be Dr. Fatima Hussain, who's the famous IV specialist, obstetrician and gynecologist, and she's also the coordinator for IMI for UK. And she does a lot of work on voluntary basis in different parts of the world, particularly in Africa. So thank you, Yadullah, and thank you, and goodbye.
Thank you for having me.